You're listening to In-House Influence, featuring several of our nation's most influential in-house counsel, created by Paulson LA's Washington, D.C. office and the Association of Corporate Counsel, National Capital Region. This is your co-host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Phil Fagan, Kim Simmons, and Tara Busby from Paulson LA. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today. Mr. Fagan, will you please give us the rundown?
Sure. First, we're going to talk to Michael Briggs, who is the Senior Vice President of Human Resource and General Counsel of the Mortgage Bankers Association. Next, we'll have Katie Cole, who is the Chief Legal Officer for PECF. And then finally, we'll have Stephanie Gilliard. She is the Philanthropy Legal Counsel for Intuitive Foundation.
Let's get to know our first guest, Michael Briggs, General Counsel and Senior Vice President of Human Resources for the Mortgage Bankers Association. Michael, what is the Mortgage Bankers Association?
It's the leading industry association for all sectors of the real estate finance industry.
Cool. Where are you from originally? How many brothers and sisters? And where are you in the pecking order?
I was born in Orlando, Florida, and I'm the youngest of two. I have an older brother.
All righty, 8 to 14. What's the list look like of what you were doing 8 to 14 years old?
We live near a lake, so I was in the lake a lot of the time, swimming and riding my bike when playing with my friends, and did some reading as well.
And you mentioned that mom went through some stuff when you were a kid, and what kind of stuff was she going through, and how'd that make you feel?
My mother suffered from depression and anxiety her entire life, but I tuned into that very early in my life. And so I took on the role of trying to help her minimize the effects of how she was feeling. So I took on that protective role.
Yeah. You mentioned that you were behaving far above your age and that you were the peacemaker. And did somebody ask you to take on that role? Or was that just sort of like a natural role for you?
No, I was drawn to it and I took it on without anybody, without even knowing I was taking on, obviously at the time when I was at such a young age.
So this deep sense of empathy you've got, what's that have to do with your role as the, it says you're the General Counsel, Senior Vice President of Human Resources for the Mortgage Bankers Association?
Because I lead in my role at the MBA as a person who seeks to create relationships and invest in people and to think about what they're dealing with, what I need to pay attention to. And so that helps me be a more effective leader because I invest in people and I focus on my role as creating the environment for their success.
Yeah, it sounds to me like your empathy really gives you a full picture of who they are so that when you go to serve them, you've got the full picture. Philip, you want to give me a hand getting to know Michael?
Sure. Michael, what was the dinner table like when you were growing up?
Well, on the surface, it was pleasant. I grew up in a very traditional Catholic family. My father was a law enforcement officer, and I have my older brother and I would join them at dinner. There was, though, underlying tension at the dinner table because my mother's anxiety. And of course, I didn't really relate to my father and brother on the level of their interest and love of sports because that wasn't something I was into. So I think that it was a pleasant above the surface dinner conversation, but there was tension always lurking just beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. So how did you cope with that as far as not identifying through sports?
Well, I think I adapted a really good effective skill, a coping skill of adapting myself to the environment. So figuring out a way to connect with my father and brother or my mother on topics and subjects that were of mutual interest. That was how I figured out how to navigate that.
Now, how's that serving you nowadays? Yeah.
Well, I think it makes me resilient and I think makes me able to sort of read the room and figure out and not to be disingenuous, but to just sort of say, oh, this is where we need to have this conversation go. And this is the setting we need to navigate here.
Cool. Kim, you want to give me a hand, please?
Yeah. You had mentioned kind of creating the environment for people to be successful and your childhood of being kind of the adult in the room. How do you know what makes people successful?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of ways, but I would say the primary way that I observe people being successful based on my efforts to create that environment is seeing them grow, seeing them take on more responsibility, seeing them thrive, seeing them get promoted. And on occasion, seeing them get promoted to jobs that result in them no longer working for me, which is a good problem to have, in my view.
Tara?
Michael, you described yourself as an interdisciplinarian. Any examples of this when you were between the ages of 8 and 14?
Yeah, I think a couple of examples of being an interdisciplinarian are being able to relate to people based on different cultural and backgrounds. My family is historically from New England, but I grew up in the South. So I could relate to people from different parts of the country. Florida is a place where everybody comes from somewhere else in a lot of cases. So I figured out how to relate to people based on where they were coming from, literally and geographically.
How does that relate to your job today?
Well, I mean, I think that allows me to be even more effective at connecting with people, at seeing people as individuals and wanting to know their story. And so I often ask people when I meet them, tell me your story. And I really think that's an important first question when you're trying to form a relationship with somebody in the workplace, just so you get an understanding of what that person's about.
So you mentioned when we were talking in the green room that it really wasn't 8 to 14 that defined you. It was something that happened in your late 30s. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I moved to Washington in my late 30s and came to the realization that the time had long since passed for me to come out as a gay man. And so that was a defining moment for me. And that was probably a more pivotal period in my life, frankly, than the 8 to 14 years.
Tell us more about that. What are you talking about?
Well, I think once you really fully lean into being your authentic self, as that is defined for me in that particular instance, then you free up all this space in your brain that you've been holding on to, trying to think about how to navigate things. And then all that does is allow you to redeploy all of your energy, all of your talents, all of your thinking into the more important task of how to be the most successful leader and how to help your company be successful, how to help other people successful. So it just unleashed energy and talent that was being unnecessarily hampered by this part of me that I kept secret.
How's this helping you in your role with the Mortgage Bankers Association?
Because I have the experience of walking through the world as on the surface of being someone who enjoys the privilege of being, for example, a white man, but also knows really personally what it's like to be other. So I think that helps me. I think it's a superpower to be able to have experienced being othered in some way in your life that gives you empathy and it gives you an ability to look into someone and see, I may not know their full story, but I should not be imposing my assumptions on that person.
So what's your superpower, your ability, your deep desire to serve your mom and to serve other people? What's that have to do with you being a successful, it says here, your general counsel and senior vice president of human resources for the Mortgage Bankers Association?
I'm a creative and resilient problem solver. And every day as general counsel, the world brings you a brand new question and an unresolved issue and something you've never thought about before. And then you turn your attention to that and you unpack it and you figure it out. And it's that lack of fear of the unknown and the lack of fear of being able to turn to something you've never encountered before, a question you haven't encountered before. I think that makes me uniquely effective in my role because I never know what the day is going to bring, and that's okay with me.
So it sounds to me like your rock, your stabilization is really understanding who you're working with or whose problem you're dealing with coming from your empathy. Your empathy is like a source of tremendous information for you then to go ahead and make decisions. Where am I reading that right and wrong? What are you thinking?
I think my empathy does enable me to make good strategic decisions. I think it ensures that I collaborate, that I seek input. But I'm also a person who knows how to come to a conclusion, who knows how to bring the discussion to an end, and knows how to take action. So I think it's both. I think that it allows me to really consider the options, but I have a long track record in government and out of government and at the MBA of knowing that you need to, at the end of the day, we need to solve the solution and we need to offer, we need to bring the answer to the customer.
What's the best part of your job?
Well, absolutely. The relationships that I form with people, that's the very best part of my job. The work is really interesting, and I certainly love the membership, but the people that I get to work with day in and day out, whether it's staff or volunteers, is really the highest part and the best part of my job.
What's the website address for the Mortgage Bankers Association?
It's www.m as in Michael, b as in boy, a as in apple.org.
We've been speaking with Michael Briggs, General Counsel and Senior Vice President of Human Resources, the Mortgage Bankers Association. Don't forget to visit our website at WashingtonOfficeOfPulcinelli.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break. Don't go anywhere.
And your name and organization is?
Shannon Graving, Association of Corporate Counsel, National Capital Region.
And what's your role in the organization?
I'm the Executive Director.
Where are you from originally, Shannon?
Boonesboro, Maryland.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
One sister who's younger.
Uh-huh. Didn't you tell us a story earlier about a story your mother reminded you about when you were a little girl?
My mother often reminds me that I started planning parties when I was 10. I would host them quarterly, and each one would have a theme, and I would have to be very creative on a limited budget to come up with something fun.
So you were coming up with ideas to involve all the other kids in the neighborhood, and you came up with a series of them on a constant basis. What's that have to do with your role at ACC nowadays?
It was great training for what we do now. ACC NCR hosts about 150 events a year. They've broken out into various themes. So we host a lot of CLE programs on subject matter areas like employment and real estate, government contracts, litigation. And then we host parties. So we have socials, and we also host roundtables where we get to network and have shared learning. And it fits perfectly with what I did.
And what's the website address of your organization?
acc.com/NCR.
We've been speaking with
Shannon Graving, Association of Corporate Counsel, National Capital Region.
Thank you.
We're back. You're listening to In-House Influence, featuring several of our nation's most influential in-house counsel, created by Pulcinelli's Washington, D.C. office and the Association of Corporate Counsel, National Capital Region. This is your co-host, Herb Cohen. And let's get to know Katie Cole, Chief Legal Officer of PECF. Katie, what is PECF? What are you guys up to?
We are a foundation that oversees the legal work of the National Cathedral, as well as its affiliated schools, St. Albans, Beauvoir, and National Cathedral School.
Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters? Where are you in the pecking order?
Vienna, Virginia. Two older brothers, and I'm number three.
And 8 to 14, what's that list of stuff look like that you were doing as a kid?
Too much, but in particular, I was really into reading Nancy Drew's every chance I could get and doing a lot of swimming.
Uh-huh. You mentioned also that you switched schools once or twice as a kid. That must have been a lot of fun. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky enough when I was in third grade to get into a gifted and talented program, which I did until eighth grade. But then I was unlucky enough that in eighth grade, I took a test to get into a school where my brothers went and almost all my friends went, and I didn't get in. And that was a real defining moment of my life.
What do you mean it was a defining moment? What are you talking about?
Yeah, until that point, I had felt like I was always a straight-A student. I had, you know, done well on all the tests. And for the first time in my life, I failed something. I didn't get into something that I really, really wanted. And all of my friends and my relatives, my brothers, were all at this place. And I had to go someplace to a different high school where I didn't know anyone.
Uh-huh. So you felt a sense of rejection? Is that what was what?
Yeah. I mean, I was in fact rejected. And I think what I had to learn from that was a real amount of resiliency. And I had to think about myself in a different light that wasn't just, you know, Katie Cole, straight A student. It was now, you know, Katie Cole, got to figure out what else you're good at.
So what's that have to do with who you are nowadays? And well, what happened to, did that shift the meaning of your life? And what's that have to do with who you are nowadays?
It did. It, you know, I ended up going to a school where I only knew a handful of kids on the first day. And it forced me to be comfortable and some discomfort to put myself out there. I am probably overly proud that my freshman year I became class president. It helped that no one else ran against me. But still, I put myself out there, and that, you know, helped change my trajectory of my high school life. So yeah, I'd say having to go to a place where I didn't know many people and put myself out there is something that still informs my life today.
Mm-hmm. Philip.
Yeah, Katie, you said earlier Nancy Drew was your role model. Talk about why.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up just reading arguably obsessively every Nancy Drew multiple times over. And what I really admired about her was here was a female protagonist that was valued for her problem-solving skills, her intellect, her savvy. And I think that's informed how I work today. You know, I like to think of myself as a pragmatist, someone who can solve problems efficiently, who can marshal resources, and someone who's really valued for her kind of team building and camaraderie. And I think I learned a lot of that from reading those Nancy Drews.
Mm-hmm. What does that have to do with being a lawyer?
You know, that really is a day-to-day of being a lawyer, particularly of being a chief legal officer, is of taking problems that you've never seen and trying to figure out how can I solve them, or where do I get the clues or the other information from other folks to bring to bear to be able to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. Kim?
Yeah, I'm wondering, what was it like being the youngest of two, and specifically the youngest of two brothers?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And as I joke, you know, my brothers were, they're older than me and they're a lot bigger than me. They're 6'5 and 6'2. So they're really big brothers. And for me, it made me tougher. My brothers, you know, really wanted me to be just as good as they were at sports, just as, you know, hardworking as they were. And I looked up to them a lot. So I'd say having those two older brothers taught me both the value of hard work, earning respect, and resiliency.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that affects how you operate today and how you lead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like to think it helps me not be intimidated. And it also helps me to be, I would say, in a world that often is dominated by men, and to be able to be comfortable in all male, especially when I was at a law firm. That was something I was very comfortable with. And it taught me, just the value of kind of getting along with folks who have different perspectives, as my two older brothers often did.
Mm-hmm. Tara?
Edie, how did your family respond when you didn't get into the school that your brothers attended?
Yeah, I love that question. And both my parents were incredibly supportive. The school that I had applied to, Thomas Jefferson School for Science and Technology, was a math and science focused school. And those weren't my areas of interest or of particular strength. And my parents, I think, always thought, why are you doing something just to do it and just because everyone else is doing it? Why don't you go to the place that might actually be right for you individually? And that support that they showed me, I think, is something that really led me through and helped me get on paths that were right for me, as opposed to just what it seemed like the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you were involved in way too many activities in the 11th grade. What happened?
Yeah, I was kind of the consummate overachiever. I entered high school and I played every sport. I was on student government. I was in band. I was in every honor society. There was a period of time when the editor-in-chief of the newspaper joked that his goal was to make sure there was an issue where I was not mentioned in some way. And that led to, by my junior year, me having, I would argue, a bit of a meltdown, a real, you know, come to Jesus moment of, I can't handle all of this pressure. My parents were incredibly supportive. They always felt like, hey, push yourself less hard. Go enjoy yourself. And I think it was a real reminder to me of a young age that, you know, do the things you want to do, but you don't have to do everything. Pick and choose your spots.
Mm-hmm. What's it have to do with who you are nowadays?
You know, I like to think that I work hard, but I also really value the things that matter in my life, which at this point are in particular my two kids and my husband and my family. So I think it is something I think about even today when I have those instincts to just work a little bit more, you know, stay up a little bit later. I try to sit back and remind myself, don't push too hard. That doesn't mean anywhere good, and focus on what really matters in life.
Mm-hmm. Philip.
Katie, can you talk a little bit about your parents and how they were role models? What you take from them to work every day?
Absolutely. My parents are unbelievable, and I'm so lucky to have had them. My father was an attorney for the Department of Justice for most of his career. My mother stayed home till I was 12, and then she went back to work as a copy editor for the sports section of USA Today. And you will not find anyone who knows more about sports than my mother. I'd say my dad taught me empathy. He handled incredibly hard cases, medical malpractice cases on behalf of the Department of Justice. And in those cases, he showed an ability to handle really tricky subjects with deep care and emotional resonance. And my mom taught me in particular to be someone who is very detail oriented. She may object to that characterization, but I swear I am.
Mm-hmm. What do you really enjoy about what you do?
I love working on behalf of kids, and I love working on behalf of teachers. Being in education is a unique opportunity to be able to ensure that my day-to-day work is in favor and is ensuring that kids get the best possible education, and that teachers and school-based staff are really supported in getting the resources that they need.
What's that have to do with the fact that you're working in education? What's that have to do with the early education you received and some of the experiences you've got?
Yeah, I think I saw, you know, a lot of different types of education and through both, you know, my personal experience and through volunteering when I was a little older as well, I got to see, you know, how different people in different student populations, their different access to schools. And that's informed my trajectory in wanting to be in education so that every kid who's out there gets a great quality education.
So it's not only access, though, it's also
how the education occurs?
Yeah, I'd say it has to do with, you know, when issues come up with kids every day at every school across the country, and kids deserve to make sure that those concerns are addressed when they come up, and that we're doing everything we can to make sure that they have a wonderful and supportive learning environment. And that's part of my job.
But here it says you're the chief legal officer. Do you ever like get out in the field and really find out what's going on?
I sure do. You know, I definitely try to be out there walking around, you know, showing up to school performances when I can, volunteering when there are opportunities to do so. One of the best parts of the job is the actual day-to-day interaction with kids.
It sounds like you enjoy that as opposed to finding it a burden. Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Oh, no, I mean, there's nothing better than, you know, just the other day I was talking to a head of school and out the window I could hear, you know, laughter and you know, kids playing, and that just gives you life. It's what, you know, it's the real reason why we do the work.
Why do you do the work?
Because I want to support kids. I want to, you know, be here and make sure that when issues come up, they're addressed in a timely fashion, and that they have a wonderful environment to learn in and can achieve their fullest potential.
So you really enjoyed hearing the kids playing outside. What's the website address of this organization and is PECF?
Yeah, the foundation is PECF.org.
PECF.org. We've been speaking with Katie Cole, Chief Legal Officer of PECF, here on the very special show, In-House Influence, featuring several of our nation's most influential in-house counsel, created by Paul Cinelli's Washington, D.C. office. Don't forget to visit our website, paulcinelli.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break.
And your name and organization is?
Sure. I'm Phil Fagan. I'm with the law firm of Paul Cinelli, and I'm the managing partner of the D.C. office.
The managing partner of the DC office of Polsonelli, which is an Am Law 100 national law firm. Philip, I had interviewed you previously and you told us something about some sort of a medical thing you had going on 15 years ago. What was that all about?
Yeah, right in sort of the height of my career about 15 years ago, I developed epilepsy out of nowhere.
And for some reason, Polsonelli has a very special reputation amongst the team regarding how well the team is managed and how well the team is selected. And I'm trying to figure out what epilepsy taught you about building a team of attorneys and staff.
We're not just workers. We're all real people. And to be cohesive and to work together, we have to understand what people go through, and our clients understand what people go through, and we understand what our clients go through. So we're offering more than just pure legal advice. We're offering to be there with businesses and to help them through their problems.
So this epilepsy heightened your sense of empathy?
Absolutely. We have to understand what people are going through, particularly in the times that we right now.
What's the website address of this law firm, Polsonelli?
Polsonelli.com.
We're back. You're listening to In-House Influence, featuring several of our nation's most influential in-house counsel, created by Polsonelli's Washington, D.C. office and the Association of Corporate Counsel, National Capital Region. This is your co-host, Herb Cohen. And let's get to know Stephanie Gilliard, Philanthropy Legal Counsel of Intuitive Foundation. What is the Intuitive Foundation, Stephanie?
It is a foundation that helps to cure the world of untrained surgeons. Lack of surgery causes more deaths than malaria, TB, and cancer combined worldwide.
Where are you from originally? How many brothers and sisters, and where are you in the pecking order?
Originally from the Midwest, but raised in Staten Island, New York during my formative years. I have an older sister, and then I have a twin brother, and I am 6 minutes older.
Alrighty, 8 to 14. What was that list of stuff you were up to 8 to 14 years old?
8 to 14 was not the best years. I was living with my mother and my stepfather, who was abusive. So kind of dealing with that. And when she finally had the courage to leave at 10, I moved to Staten Island, New York, where we struggled as a single mom, was on public assistance for some time. And finally, you know, I was taken away from her because she couldn't care for us. And I moved in with my Aunt Janice.
And you mentioned you went to live, you shared a bedroom with your cousin. And what did all that stuff have to do? What'd that do to you?
It just made me really try to understand my own individuality, what was my place in the world. not living in my own home with my parents, you know, a nice two family, idyllic lifestyle, and just, you know, really say, okay, Stephanie, who are you? Who do you want to be? How do you want to be?
Mm-hmm. Tara, could you give me a hand, please?
Stephanie, what do you think made you choose a career in philanthropy?
I have always been a person who wants to help. And certainly I'm trying to use all the gifts that God has given me. I am a big person. I believe I'm very faithful. I rely on my faith for everything, but I also really embrace the concept of stewardship for my Aunt Janice, who was a pastor, is still is a pastor. And so I just want to serve in whatever capacity I can to bring value to not just the people I work with and work for, but also just, you know, people in general.
Mm-hmm. Kim?
Yeah. How young were you when you knew you wanted to be a lawyer?
I was 10, not because of some epiphany of lawyers being in my family or of seeing someone else do it, just another girl who was popular and came from a good family said she wanted to be a lawyer. And I said, well, me too.
And you had mentioned kind of with your stepfather needing to feel safe. How does that play out in what you do today?
I am a staunch advocate for others' safety as well, especially in the workplace. I am a huge advocate for employees. I really care about how they're treated, how the company treats them. Now, certainly that can fall under the guise of, you know, following all of our laws, all the federal laws that protect employees. But I take it a step further. I really care about their development, their training aspects, promotional opportunities, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Philip?
Yeah, Stephanie, you mentioned that you had a younger twin brother who was exactly 6 minutes younger. I feel like maybe it's more than 6 minutes, given how you addressed that.
We are definitely, there's a definite distinction in our trio of siblings, because I feel like I am the middle child. I have an older sister, and then I have a brother. And so even though we're twins, he's still the only boy. And then my sister is just older and more, she was popular, pretty, all that good stuff. And I just came out as a skinny nerd, basically.
And how has that sort of played into where you are now in your legal career?
Certainly. Again, middle kids, they want to stand out. They have to do something to distinguish themselves, disrupt the market, so to speak. And I feel that whatever work place or position I come into, the first thing, obviously, I want to know the role. I want to know, you know, what my remit is. But also I'm like, well, what can I do different to make it better, to enhance, to just make it more attractive for the clients that I support and my colleagues.
Right.
Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to make it more attractive for everybody? Why do you want to stir the pot and get everybody involved?
I think it is because of how I grew up, of, you know, that sense of being invisible, not seen, or just honestly hiding myself because I wanted to feel safe in my home. I didn't want to feel different because I was poor, you know, and I didn't have as much. I didn't have the best clothes and, you know, the cool name brand sneakers and jeans. So I just kind of get that sense of I've always wanted better. I've always wanted better for myself, better than how I grew up, better than how, you know, my mom had it. And so those are the things I think that motivate me to always bring things up a bit, to kick it up a notch, so to speak.
Yeah, it sounds to me, though, like as opposed to me, you're at the stage of your life where you're really about giving back and making sure that what you didn't have, everybody else does have. Am I reading that correctly?
You are. And I'm also big on showing people that they have the ability to bring their gifts out themselves. Nobody has to give you anything. You can create literally the life that you want. You can create environments that are beneficial to you and not detrimental. You have choices.
So I think you're talking about is that each of us has gifts. We should recognize our gifts and take advantage of our gifts.
Yes, it's all about really leaning into your own intuition, you know, being true to yourself, being your authentic self, but also having the courage to be who you are.
What's your intuition have to do with law?
I know who's guilty and who's not guilty. No, it really my intuition tells me, you know, the causes that I should fight for. You know, in the legal positions I should take when, you know, advising my clients. I really can live in the gray. You know, I am not a black and white person when it comes to evaluating different issues. And certainly my clients appreciate that.
And what's the best part of your job? What do you like about your job?
The best part is seeing the results of the work that my foundation does, seeing the, you know, resulting improvements in healthcare and outcomes and, you know, just how the impact that that's going to make on a person's life.
Sounds like you really enjoy your job.
I do. I do. It gives me purpose. You know, my prior company, their main product was money. I worked for a casino. Well, not a casino, sorry, pari-mutuel wagering facility. And so that was the focus. Let's make some money, which is fine because they did a lot of good stuff with that money. I actually managed their charitable giving program when I was at the company, something a lawyer would never do, but I wanted to do it because it was important to me. And so I got to network with a lot of foundations and nonprofits in my area. And it was just, again, it was a joy. It was a pleasure, but it was not my primary role for the company. So when I had the option to work for a foundation, I ran with it.
So you find purpose in your work?
Absolutely. Every single day.
Uh-huh. How interesting. What is the website address for this organization known as Intuitive Foundation?
It is intuitive-foundation.org.
Intuitive-foundation.org. We've been speaking with Stephanie Gilliard, Philanthropy Legal Counsel, Intuitive Foundation. Philip, can you give us a rundown of who we've had on the show today, please?
Sure. First, we talked to Michael Briggs, who is the Senior Vice President of Human Resources and General Counsel of the Mortgage Bankers Association. Then we got to know Katie Cole, who's Chief Legal Officer of PECF. And finally, we were just speaking with Stephanie Gilliard, Philanthropy Legal Counsel at Intuitive Foundation.
I'd like to thank my co-hosts, including Phil Fagan, Kim Simmons, and Tara Busby from the law firm of Polsinelli. And you've been listening to In-House Influence, featuring several of our nation's most influential in-house counsel, created by Polsinelli's Washington, D.C. office and the Association of Corporate Counsel, National Capital Region. Don't forget to visit our website. It's the Washington, D.C. office of Polsinelli.com. That's Polsinelli.com. Thank you for joining us today and have a nice day. Bye-bye.